All right, so just a few closing points about osing mitzvah, patam and a mitzvah. So one is just to kind of make a summary statement about a lot of what we've spoken so far, and it was prompted by a question I'll just ask coming up, that it really is fascinating just how I don't think I'm forcing things to say that every issue seems to all come back to that one central machlokas, because the machlokas defines the essence of what this concept is about. So, asked another way, but it's still revolving around the same central Ritva Ran issue, is Osek B'mitzvah about Ones or not? You know, is it something that addresses a situation where you have to have some kind of policy because you can't do what you need to do, you just can't satisfy everything, so we need to have some kind of rule? Or is it something not related to that? And because Ones is assumed to either be self-evident or be known from other sources, which it also is, so the assumption is Osek B'mitzvah either has to be a completely different idea or has to at least add something. So according to the Ran, it's a completely different idea, because the Ran does not assume Ones here. The Ran does not assume that it's impossible for you to do both mitzvahs. So the Ran takes this into a whole different place, while the Ritva works off the assumption that there is a central Ones, that you can't be doing both things. So still the question is, okay, so what is the Chiddush, since we know that already? So the Chiddush is that you're not even allowed to stop this and choose the other one. Even to exercise some discretion as to which one to do, you're not allowed to do. So this machlokas, which we've been talking about the whole time, just to show how it just defines everything that comes out of this, because the very first step needs to establish this groundwork that the question of are we dealing with part of the Ones family of Dinim is contingent on this machlokas as well. So Daniel Yasmin came up, like, how does this relate to us, say, Dochalosa, say, etc. So there are a number of rules which we could all lump into this basket of how do you deal with impossible situations when you can't satisfy everything, you have a conflict, what do you do? So Ones reflects that idea. Asei Dochalosa say is a part of that category also, because the whole premise of Asei Dochalosa say is Yefshe L'Kayim Shnehem, that you have to choose either the Asei or the Losa Asei, what wins. So there are a number of concepts that go in that category. So either Osek Mitzvah is also one of them, which we're lining up with the Ritva, or it's not. It's a different kind of idea, in which case it's not really relevant to this. It addresses different kinds of situations. So just to add a few more points about this. So first of all, we spent some time talking about Drabanans and whether Osek B'mitzvah Drabanan patters from a mitzvah Daraisa. So we mentioned two general ways to look at the issue. One, whether it has to do with how we see mitzvahs Drabanan, the topic we talked about the last semester, or also the question of how we see Osek B'mitzvah. Is Osek B'mitzvah addressing anybody who's doing God's work? Malach HaShemayim, it's not Shavas Didach, Lachas Didach. Or does it have to be specifically a mitzvah that is of the level to justify avoiding other things? So we just mentioned one of the topics that's brought up as proof, just to say another word or two about that. You know, the question of, we know that somebody who's involved in Nichum Aveilim is potter from Kriya Shema, it's a din in Shulchan Aruch. And the Prima Gaudium raises the question, but it's only a mitzvah derabanan, how could that be? So we noted that there also, you could argue about whether Nicham Aveilim as an aspect of Chesed is a Doraisa, like some of the Rishonim say explicitly, or Osek B'sneezing putter from everything. Even if you're just Osek and sneeze, and you don't actually sneeze. So you know, if we say it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, so then it all is very clear. If we say that the Rambam's language of Hilchos Eivel that we looked at last week suggests that it's a mitzvah midivreihem, so how do we address that? And we mentioned that it's hard to say that the Rambam means that it's not a fulfillment of the mitzvah d'oraisa. It presumably is a mitzvah d'oraisa being fulfilled, and Chazal created the surah for it. So this comes up also, just to go back to a Gemara in the first parak, in our Masechta. If you looked at this Gemara, I don't remember if I ever actually formally put it on the Mar Makomos, but especially all those of you who are learning Bakiyas will certainly have seen this. So the Gemara on Daf Yud has a reference to this whole idea that is important, because the Gemara talks about not sneezing, and the Gemara talks about Shluchei Mitzvah. So the Gemara here on Yud Amud Beis tells us the story of the Rav Chista of Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Iklo leberish galusa, agninu Rav Nachman besukah shenoyah muflagim imena arba tfachim. So they sat in a sukkah, they're on their way to Mekabel the Rebbe, and they sat in a sukkah that was questionable. So they slept in a sukkah that was questionable. Ashtiku v'lo amrlo l'lomidi. No one didn't make any objection. So amrlohu Mishmasayu, so do you not hold that this is a problem? Amrle, the response was Ane Shluche Mitzvah Anan Upturi Minasukah. So this was apparently an example of being Patur Minasukah. So what mitzvah were they involved in that patured them from the sukkah? So it sounds like they were involved in the mitzvah of Kabbalah Spinei Rabba Beregel. So that remembering a story actually on Sukkot, we'll come back to that. an interesting story, but in any event, there is a notion of Kabbalah's Perabo Beregel. Sounds like from the Rambam that is a mitzvah midrabanan. So some raise the issue that it sounds like this Gemara is telling you that those who are involved in that mitzvah are pater min ha mitzvah, even though they're involved in a mitzvah midrabanan. Now, if you take a look, this is a Mar Mokum for you to look at, on the Fyudim and Beis, if you have the staff that we're looking at here, there is a comment to the Mitzvah Eisen. The Mitzvah Eisen is printed in the back of the Gemaras, so depending on what Gemara you have, you can find it in different places. You know, some of the more recent printings of the Shas, they throw all these commentaries into the same section. So somewhere in the back of your respective Gemaras, you can find the Mitzvah Eisen. So he has somewhat of a discussion here about this question of whether this is a raya that one who was involved in a mitzvah d'rabbanan is also a putter from a mitzvah d'raisa. So it's a kedai to take a look at. But as others point out, that it seems like their pursuit here was Talmud Torah, that they were looking to learn from their Rebbe, and therefore if you're involved in a kiyum of that, so that even if it isn't an absolute obligation, it still seems like it's a kiyum in a Torah. So that itself brings up a couple of questions. So one question is, what about the notion of a mitzvah that you choose to do? So the nesivus, I think I put the nesivus in the Mar Makomos, right? Didn't I put that nesivus? No, I didn't. Okay, nesivus is in Menayim Beis and Choshen Mishra, I didn't put that up. Okay, so sorry. But the nesivus has a claim that somebody who was a gabbai tzedaka, and therefore he took on a role that he chose to do, it's not something that presented itself to him as a chiyuv, such an individual is not putter from mitzvahs, because he chose to do the mitzvah. So there is some debate about this, but it's also possible to suggest that it opens up different understandings within Osik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. So there is a discussion in the Sefer Chavetzalos HaSharon al HaTorah. Familiar with that Sefer? It's a contemporary Sefer. He's written these huge, thick volumes. On every volume of Chumash, except some of them, he has two. So it's about 8 volumes long. So in one of these essays, he talks about, roughly makes the following point, that even if you say that somebody who involves himself in a voluntary mitzvah is pater from mitzvahs, presumably it takes on a different kind of structure to it. That, let's say, the ritzvah's understanding that you're pater completely from the second mitzvah, that should be if the first mitzvah is one that presents itself as a chiyuv. But if you choose to take on a mitzvah, so it could be it paters you in the Ron sense. It paters you because you're involved in Melacha Shemayin, but the same way you don't have a personal obligation to do this, so then presumably you at least have the right to set that aside for a second mitzvah. So it should affect how it plays out. And to combine this with an idea we mentioned last week also, so what about a situation like being pater from tzedakah? So we noted that the Gemara in Bava Kamma seems to say that somebody who's involved in a mitzvah is pater from tzedakah. And the question was asked by the Maariv Chayes, how could we be pater from tzedakah if tzedakah has low sases? You're not allowed to clench your fists or harden your heart. So we mentioned an approach that the low sases are there to strengthen the mitzvah sase. It's really defined by the mitzvah sase. Right? So far, so good. So, as the Chametzal Sashara notes, that if you're absolutely pater from a second mitzvah, if you're obligated to do the first mitzvah and you're completely pater from the second mitzvah, so okay, so then you're pater from the mitzvah sase of tzedakah. And you should also be pater from the low sases. But if you're not completely separated from the mitzvah sasei of tzedakah, it's something you could choose to do because the first mitzvah is not really obligatory. So then, presumably, the low sases are still active. And therefore, that's a reason why one really should take up the mitzvah of tzedakah despite being involved in a previous mitzvah. Which brings us back also to the point that we discussed last week as well, about are you pater from mitzvos ben adam l'chaveiro? That if somebody comes to you, let's say, with an urgent request, and you're involved in a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, does that pater you from a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro? So we mentioned last week that there are many who feel you are not pater from the mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro. And we gave the explanation based on the Avnei Nezer that you have a direct shibud to, you have a need to help somebody who is in direct need, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu can credit you with your good intentions and say, okay, you can't be in two places at once. But a person who's a human being with physical needs, they can't read your mind, nor can they say it's okay, we give you credit for what you're trying to do. So therefore, there is a need to prioritize the mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro. Right? We mentioned that last week. So just to buttress that a little bit, it's interesting, Rav Schachter makes the point in two of his svarim in two different ways. And I don't think there's the same sentence in either one of the svarim, but he talks about, in Sefer Pnine Harav, where he quotes ideas from Rav Soloveitchik, he has a fascinating approach there. He says, there is a din the Mishnah has in the beginning of the second parak of Brachos, that the Mishnah tells us that if you're in the middle of Kriya Shema, you're not allowed to interrupt. But for certain things, you can interrupt. What can you interrupt in the middle of Kriya Shema? Shela Shalom, essentially. If somebody comes and greets you, so then there's a whole matrix. You need a chart to plot all the points. But there are three different variables about when you can interrupt in the middle of Kriya Shema. Depends on three questions. Depends on whether you're in the middle of something or in between something. That's one question. Depends on who it is who's greeting you. Is it somebody who's a stama person? Is it somebody who has an obligation of kavod or an obligation of yira? And it also depends on whether you are initiating the greeting or responding to the greeting. But within those three variables, the point emerges that at least sometimes you interrupt Kriya Shema in order to greet people. So why do you do that? What's the heter to be Masa Kriya Shema? So it seems like it's because of a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? A mitzvah of Sheila Shalom. A mitzvah maybe of Kvod HaBrios, of human dignity.
Sakana.
Sorry?
Sakana.
So Sakana is a good question because one of the categories is Mipnei Ha'ira. So the Rishonim disagree, what does Mipnei Ha'ira mean? It sounds like from Rashi over there in Brachos that it's somebody who could kill you. So the later Svarim ask, well, if he can kill you, then obviously we know that there's a rule of Pikuach Nefesh. We know that this isn't Yehari Vayavor, so if the guy could kill you, so then, of course, you can interrupt Kriya Shema. So Pashta says Rashi doesn't mean that he's going to kill you for not greeting him. He means that the type of person who could kill you, that's somebody who you should work extra hard to be on his good side, and you should greet him even when it's not immediately the case that he may kill you. But that's only one of the categories. Even somebody who's not even close to killing you, we also, at least sometimes, have a heter to interrupt in Kriya Shema. So where did that heter come from? Unless you want to address that?
There's a mitzvah of Sheila Shalom?
That's what it sounds like, yeah. So that's an interesting discussion itself. All of these points are so interesting. We spend the whole year being Osik and Mitzvah and Pater from every other sugya, but we probably shouldn't do that. So I wish I could go into more detail about Sheila Shalom. Suffice to say, it sounds like from the Gemara that there is a mitzvah. Some understand that it's a mitzvah midivrei Kabbalah, to use terminology we were talking about yesterday, that there is a pasuk in Tehillim of Bakei Shalom Vareifeihu. Some understand that to be a mitzvah midivrei Kabbalah. Others understand it to be a different mitzvah midivrei Kabbalah. Some understand it to be the mitzvah of seeking shalom, just peacemaking. And others understand to be a mitzvah of greeting people. But there is a lot about the mitzvah of Sheil Shalom. I would love to talk about it at a greater length. Maybe we'll find a different opportunity for that. So either it's that mitzvah, or maybe this is a detail of Kvod HaBrios, of human dignity. So where does this come from, this whole idea of human dignity here, creating a hefsek in Kriya Shema? What's the source for it? The truth of Tosus quotes from Yerushalmi that it's based on his Rashi in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, V'dibarta bam, don't get the wrong idea here, the way this is interpreted, but then regarding Shema, it says, V'dibarta bam, mikan she'esh l'cha rishos l'daber bam. That is apparently, at least sometimes, permission to talk within them. But Rav Shechter presents a different angle in the Pnei Harav, where the idea is that this can be derived from Avram Avinu. In the beginning of Parshas Vayera, we find that Avram is being visited by God, and yet he interrupts God's visit to go take care of what he thought were people. They turned out to be angels, but they seemed like people at the time, so Avram interrupts this meeting to get involved with taking care of apparent people. So the Gemara has a statement based on that. The Gemara Masachet Shabbos has a statement of Chazayim of Gedola Hachnasa Zarchim Yosem Nehakbalos Nehashchina. That somebody who is going to receive guests is doing something even greater than interacting with God. So is that a proof to this whole point? That the Osek B'mitzvah of another Malakom interrupts for a mitzvah of another Malchareo? So Moshe's like, no, no way. Why not? It
could be only talking about Hachmas Zorachim.
Oh, so maybe Hachmas Zorachim is special. It's an interesting discussion why that should be. It's also a discussion whether Hakpalos Pnei Hashchina is actually a mitzvah or not. So the Netziv writes over there in Chumash that it's a mitzvah of Avos Hashem. But assuming that that is the case, that that's a mitzvah, so then what about the second mitzvah? So you think maybe only Hachnasas Orchim. Why should Hachnasas Orchim be special?
Tam sounds pretty good.
Well, Gemara
says Gemara specifies. It doesn't say no covered brios.
Oh, so the question is, what is the principle here? So there are some who focus specifically on Akhnasat Torah, but the Rishakta Posim of Salavetrik here is that he thinks that this is essentially a principle. The principle is that the Torah is teaching that taking care of people is something that gets prioritized even more than interacting with God himself, and that that's a principle of Kvod HaBrios, and that this is the source. Because it's an interesting discussion. What exactly is the chiddush of this din? So it sounds nice. Okay, you should take care of Orachim more than Akbalos Bnei Ashchina. So maybe that applied to Avram Avinu, but most of us don't usually have that challenge, right? How often does that come up in your life, that you have to decide whether to be Mekabel Bnei Ashchina or to take care of your guests? Because the Rambam quotes the Ba'alacha. So there's a discussion, sorry, what's the significance, what's the practical application in our lives? Does that happen to us too often?
Goldberg has vowed at his house every Monday night, whenever somebody comes in the middle of his drasha, he stops and squirts them.
Oh, okay, he stops and squirts them. But, so, what does it mean, practically speaking? So the Baal Shem Tov raises quite, Baal Shem Tov thought that it meant that sometimes you have a question of having guests for Shabbos, and you think, well, these guests, if they come over, they're going to lower the whole level of conversation. I'm going to have to speak on their level. And if they weren't here, I would say, did they tell you anything, Zemiris, and maybe learn Kabbalah and do all kinds of very uplifting things. But because the guests are here, I'm not going to be able to have the same level of spirituality as you would otherwise. So he says, no, that's still better to have the guests, that they also might follow from the Hashchina, and therefore you shouldn't focus on the high spiritual level you have about them, but rather you should recognize that this is a greater obligation. This also comes up in terms of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's quote that whether one should leave guests at home to go catch a minion. And maybe you should not, based on this idea. But in any event, so again, Rav Shechter talks about this in the Pnimi Harav, and he says that the mucker for this idea is from Avram Avinu, and that's why, he says, that's why we interrupt Kriya Shema in order to greet someone, in order to be Mekabel Panim of a human being. Hi.
So we pass him like the Baal Shem
Tov? Well, the Baal Shem Tov is a good question. I mean, it seems like in practice we do have, obviously it depends on your own personal household policy, who you pass him like, but we do recommend being Mekabel guests, even if it means that you're going to have to stretch. But in terms of this idea that this is the source for Hefzik and Kriya Shema, it's a fascinating idea.
Do you pass it for Shlomo Zalman?
You ask for Shlomo Zalman, you know, who might have really passed it for Shlomo Zalman in that sense? Really, certainly understandable. There are others who have written like that as well. There are other contemporary discussions along those lines. So, but this application that's what's going on in Kriya Shema is interesting. And the Sefer Koch VeYitzchak, or Yitzchak Sternhill, of Rabbi Baltimore, has a discussion along those lines as well. Schechter goes on to note over there that we find that there are two motifs that we kind of balance. There's a story about the Chassid Sharebi who had two pieces of paper in his pocket. Heard this? And in one pocket it said what? Bishvili Nivra Olam, the whole world was created for me. And in the other pocket, what does it say? Yes, that I am but dirt, dust and dirt, I'm nothing. And he said, this is a part of the challenge of humanity, that you have to try to balance, on the one hand, the greatness of humanity, that's as if the whole world was created for you, and on the other hand, recognizing that you are completely bottled to God. So what Rav Shechter writes there is that we have different opportunities to emphasize these two motifs. So during Kriya Shema, we emphasize this point of the greatness of humanity, so that to acknowledge a person, we will interrupt our Kriya Shema, even our interaction with God on that level. But Shmona Esrei is a different din. Shmona Esrei, we're more machmir, we don't interrupt Shmoneh Esrei for greeting people. And he says that's the other side of the cheshbon. That's where we're emphasizing the theme that humanity is nothing in front of God. So it's a very unique application of this whole idea. It's fascinating. So what I alluded to before is that in the Sefer Bikvei Hatzon, Rav Schechter has a different discussion which parallels this, even though it doesn't really overlap so much. And he says, we have a din. The Gemara tells us in a few places, in about five places, that Kvod HaBrios, that human dignity, is an overwhelming halachic principle, and it's actually able to be docha a din midrabanan. And sometimes even a din min haTorah, if it's passive, if it's a sheva al passive. So he asks, how does that work? How does it happen that Kavod HaBrios has this power to override other halachic values? And he suggests that it reflects a shibud ben adam l'chaveiro, that when we have mitzvot that are all ben adam l'makom, so then the question can come up, what mitzvah is more important than the other? But when you have an obligation to another person, so then presumably you are obligated to fulfill that shibud, and your personal mitzvah fulfillment is not going to excuse you from that. Which is the same principle we're seeing here, that Osek Mitzvah does not necessarily address an obligation that you have to another human being. So Tavir understands that's how Kvod HaBrios is able to have its impact on Halacha, because it represents a requirement that you have to respect the dignity of other people, which is a very fascinating idea if you think about it, and that could have all kinds of implications. Hi.
Which one is that, by like all mitzvahs?
No, not by all mitzvahs. The Gemara says a handful of mitzvahs. Well, Gemara has more than a handful. The Gemara says that this is also a sugya which I'm happy to spend a lot of time on, but again, it's a limited lifetime. But the Gemara says that it applies to mitzvahs d'rabbanan. Kavod HaBrios overrides mitzvahs d'rabbanan. It overrides Hashavas Aveda, that if to return the Aveda, you have to undergo a demeaning experience. And d'oraisa, the Gemara initially says it should not override mitzvahs d'oraisa, because we have the pasuk that tells us ein eitza v'ein chachma v'ein tfuna l'neged Hashem, that there is no such thing as wisdom and counsel that is against God. But then ultimately the Gemara says that, yeah, if it's an active aveira, if it's a chil Hashem, so then we're not allowed to do it. But if it's a passive violation of Torah law, if it's something we're just going to sit out, so then Kavod HaBrios does win. So this whole idea of Kavod HaBrios having such an impact, that's how he explains there. It's because it represents a shibud ben adam l'chaver. Hi.
Question from before. We talked about how some argue that the lotaseis mixed with the essays are just like sort of to make them stronger, but aren't really as severe as a regular lotasei.
Mm-hmm.
According to those...
Or that we follow the rules of an essay in assessment.
Yeah, so like, if they were giving a list of mitzvahs, they count them as one, or would you saw the lotaseis and essays listed?
So, you know, I don't know if there's an absolute rule for that, because it depends on how you understand each individual case. And sometimes that's going to be a clue, perhaps. So that gets into these broader questions of both how you understand mitzvos in general, and also how you understand these specific mitzvos. So in the case of Stucker, the Rambam does count them separately, which is interesting in itself.
Which seems to indicate that they wouldn't be...
You get that impression a little bit, but then there still could be other heterim. It's an interesting discussion, because just again, avoid every tangential issue by saying it's a brisho. So I'll just address that for a second. There's just so much that we could pursue. It's, you know, Baruch Hashem, the Yam HaTalmud allows for so many different rivers, but we have to maintain some discipline. But I'll just address this question for a second. You know, part of the whole stucco issue. So, okay, there's a mitzvah saseh that we can either fulfill or not. But what do we do about these losases? What do we do about these very scary ideas that the Torah seems to be saying that if we don't give tzedakah, we're in violation of two Torah prohibitions? It's like we're wearing shatnez and eating a cheeseburger at the same time. How do we address that? So there are different answers to that question, but one principle you find in the Achronim is that if you have a good excuse why you're not giving tzedakah, so then you're not going to be subject to the los ases either. So let's say you have tzedakah priorities that say you have to give to someone else first, or you've already given away more tzedakah than you can afford, and the halacha regulates that, as we've discussed, so then you don't have the los ases either. So why is that? It doesn't just have to be lumdish, it could be literal also. Because if you look at the psukim, right, what do they say? It doesn't say never. You may never refuse tzedakah. What's the language? Right, lo sikpot es yadcha, lo sa'amitz es levavcha. You should not clench your fist. You should not harden your heart. So it sounds to us like this is a poetic way of saying never refuse. But what if it's not poetic? What if it's literal? And that's how it sounds like from some as well, that the Torah is not saying you can never refuse. The Torah is saying you can't refuse by saying it's not my problem. That if someone says, I don't believe in tzedakah, I have a lot of money, but I see you're clearly needy, but I'm not going to give to you because I happen to come from stone and I don't believe in the concept of tzedakah, so then that's a problem. That's what the pasuk comes to address. But if the issue is that I would love to give tzedakah, I believe very much in generosity, but I am strapped for cash, I don't know how trustworthy you are, I have other priorities in tzedakah, I have other responsibilities, so then you're not in violation of these in a literal sense. You're simply not hardening your heart, and you're not clenching your fist. So then that's why you're not in violation of those yisurim. Right? In other words, maybe we don't need a lumdish explanation. We just need to read the words literally. The Torah is not saying you may never refuse. The Torah is saying you may never harden your heart and say, I don't believe in compassion. But if your reluctance to give to this person is not based on that, it's based on something else, so then maybe you're not in violation anyway. So, and that's what the Rambam sounds like in Sefer HaMitzvos. If you read in Sefer HaMitzvos, when he quotes those prohibitions, so he writes that this is there to make sure that we don't define ourselves in a negative way, that we don't create a character that is insensitive and that is callous, and that's what emerges from that also. So there's a lot to address over there. So in any event, this all connects to this idea that maybe there is a major distinction to be drawn between mitzvos ben adam l'mako, mitzvos ben adam l'chaveiro, for a number of reasons. And again, this was all a part of our closing discussion here about mitzvah A passes you from mitzvah B. Is that always true? What if mitzvah A is of a certain category? What if mitzvah B is of a certain category? How does that affect things? So one point we haven't had a chance yet to address, so let's try to take care of this now, is what's the rule if the first mitzvah is Talmud Torah? Does that pot to you from other mitzvahs? Yeah, God?
Usually it means that if nobody else can do the mitzvah, you have to do it. If someone else can do the mitzvah, then...
So that's what emerges from the Gemara by Katan and that test, which I did put on the list, right? Which makes it actually a little complicated to formulate a rule, because you can formulate it two ways. And so, on the one hand, this is a little bit paradoxical, it seems, because to say that Osik B'Torah does not pater from mitzvos seems very difficult, because Torah is a mitzvah that we put very high up on the pedestal of mitzvos, and we say that on the Torah connected kulam, that it's equal to all the other mitzvos, and yet, from this perspective, it seems to be less than all the other mitzvos, because every other mitzvah, at least in the Torah, should talk to you from the second mitzvah, and Talmud Torah somehow does not.
Yes, sir.
The logic is that no point in my commentary gets you to do the mitzvahs.
So that's one explanation. So we'll come to these answers in a second. But just to formulate the question, we have to first figure out, so what is the principle? So that Gemara gives us a little room to not be sure, because you could say that, what's the rule? The rule is Talmud Torah does pater you from other mitzvahs, unless it's a mitzvah that is incumbent on you personally and no one else will do it. Or you could say it the other way around, that Talmud Torah does not pater you from other mitzvahs, except if it's a mitzvah that somebody else can do, so then you should stay learning if the other person isn't. So what is the klal? It does pater you or it doesn't pater you? What's the exception? What's the rule and what's the exception? So that's not so clear. It sounds like from the formulation of the Rambam that really the exception is when no one else can do the mitzvah. The basic rule is Talmud Torah is gadol k'neged kol mitzvos, it's huge, and it does exempt you. It's just that if there's a mitzvah that no one else can do, or it's your personal obligation, that's the exception. But to say it the other way around, that Talmud Torah should not pater, that's something requires some explanation, especially because it sounds like from Mar Gemara and Sukkah that those who are on the way to a shir are pater. But if you're at the shir, you're not pater? So how do you explain that? How do you explain that going to learn, you are pater, but learning itself doesn't pater? And even without that contradiction, why should Talmud Torah be different? So that is one of the approaches. So one approach, just in terms of the Talmud Torah, just maybe mention that one first, but some would suggest that maybe we focus on tirda as well, needing to have a certain amount of stress associated with the mitzvah. So when you're trying to get to the shir, as we all know, especially if the shir is across the street and it's raining, and you have to go down number of floors and get back up the number of floors in the next building. So that can be stressful. There are all kinds of obstacles in between. And that can be stressful. But once you're actually in this year, then what could be less stressful? What could be less preoccupying? So that's one possible approach. But just again, to turn to this general question of why should Talmud Torah not exempt? So there are a number of approaches. And one approach is like Gilad is saying, and there's a theory like this, and if I remember correctly, Baron Lichtenstein, the Chassidic Bracha, wrote an article about this in one of the Sfarim that were published by Yeshiva University a number of years ago, where they suggest that an inherent part of Talmud Torah is Lishmor v'las l'kayim. If you want to limur v'am lishmor v'las l'kayim, you need to fulfill the mitzvos as well. So if learning about mitzvos prevents you from doing them, so then there's something fatally flawed in the learning process. To say I can't do mitzvos because I'm learning about mitzvos, there's something inherently problematic. Now we mentioned on Chumash here on Thursday that this is kind of the other side of what we were talking about then. Then we talked about the importance of learning even beyond doing. But at the same time, doing is a crucial part of the learning experience. And for one to not do because of learning, maybe there is some inherent tension there. Daniel?
So you're saying when people interpret Torah Lishma as learning not even to do, but for a greater and a connection with God, that can only be done on top of, but not like against Torah.
Well, it seems like that's one way to reconcile them, because we seem to have a little bit, it's not so much a contradiction, but it's that we're emphasizing two points that are at different ends from each other. So with Nasa Manishma, we emphasize the idea of learning even separate from Kiyum HaMitzvah. So when you have these topics that never come up, like Ben Sora Mora, etc., so that there is still a mitzvah of learning, and that was how the Beis Halevi understood Nasa Manishma, the Nishma even beyond what's necessary to do. But still, the Kiyum HaMitzvah is a part of Talmud Torah. So to not perform the mitzvahs because of it that's still something that undermines the Talmud Torah. So again, it's not a contradiction, it's just two points that have to be in balance with each other, that yes, we certainly want to learn in order to do, but also to learn separate from that as well, to be able to learn beyond that, and on top of that, even without a need for practical knowledge, is inherently a part of the Kabbalah Satorah that we celebrate in this past week's parsha. So just to mention maybe one or two other approaches, there is an approach that Vilna Gaon has in his commentary to Peah, which sounds very, very technical, but maybe it taps into a more conceptual idea as well. There, the Mishnah says in Peah that Talmud Torah is one of the Dvarim She'en Lahem Shir. Right, so you never have a shir for Talmud Torah, so that seems like a steer. No, but that doesn't mean a lesson. What does it mean there? Ein lahem shir doesn't have a measurement. Sorry?
Shir for schar.
A shir for schar, okay. That's relevant also. So what does that mean to say there's no measurement?
Maximum.
Also, it could mean there's no maximum. But the gra... Sorry? No, sorry, what did you say?
I said no minimum.
Oh, so the gra says, like you, there's no minimum. So maybe this is what Moshe was just getting at, talking about schar, that you could ask, all right, so if I only had a minute to learn today, did I fulfill a mitzvah of Talmud Torah? What's the smallest kiyum I can get for Talmud Torah? What's the minimum? I mean, I was just speaking at a continuing legal education event, and part of the discussion you have to figure out, so exactly what's the shear in order to be yotze, you know, how much do you need for continuing professional education? So it's a part of the whole process. So too, what's the shear for Talmud Torah? So you want to say, okay, I did some Torah study today. What's a kiyum? Now the Gemara, as some were pointing out just now, Gemara does talk about what is the chiyuv. How much does one have an obligation to keep on learning? But to hear this question is a little different, that if I had an extra minute to learn, so is that a fulfillment of a mitzvah, or does it have to be a full shir, like a lesson, shir, different sense of the word? Does it have to be a blot? Does it have to be a perek? What is the minimum? So the Gra said that ein l'dvarim she'en lahem shir means that you take the smallest unit of time that you could possibly conceive of, that's a fulfillment of a mitzvah when you're learning.
It really makes sense with the context of other mitzvahs put in these.
Yeah, so it could be. So it's interesting because there's a little bit of a paradoxical effect here. Because on the one hand, he's saying this to highlight the infinite value that there is in Talmud Torah. And so you go for a 60-minute shir. Okay, the word keeps being confused. You go for a 60-minute Torah lecture. So how many mitzvahs of Talmud Torah did you do during that time? Those 60 minutes. So the Gra would say infinite, because it's not 1 minute that you'll say, okay, there were 60 fulfillments. It's even less than that. You keep chopping it to the smallest possible quantity. Each one is a mitzvah. So the point is to emphasize the tremendous value there is in learning. But the paradoxical effect is you could say that there's no such thing as ever being in the middle of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Because if we knew, you have to learn for an hour, otherwise it's nothing. Right, let's say you say that that's the case. If it's less than an hour, it's not a kiyum. So then if you were 32 minutes into your Torah lecture, you could say, listen, I'm osek b'mitzvah right now, I can't interrupt for something else. But because it's so much smaller than that, so essentially, whenever the other mitzvah presents itself, you are not in the middle of the mitzvah, you're in between two mitzvahs. So therefore, there's room for the other mitzvah to come in.
Unless you learn while you're running.
Sorry?
Unless you learn while you're running.
Unless you learn...
while you're running.
While you're running, is that what you said?
If you run to the mitzvah, that counts.
Yeah, the running to the mitzvah is the mitzvah. Yeah. But learning while you're doing that. But even then, you'll still be in the middle of two. The learning that you're doing while you're running is still going to break down to subparts. So that's possible as well. But there's another perspective. Maybe we'll just close with this point. It really also relates to the idea of Eilu Dvarim She'en Lahem Shir, the idea that Talmud Torah is somehow different than other mitzvos in terms of its parameters and its definition. And this goes to the whole broader question. We actually spoke about this last year when we were learning Kedushin, and the sugya came up. So there was an extensive discussion among the Achronim. What is the nature of the Chi of Talmud Torah? How much does it ask of us? So I think I mentioned last year, those who were here, that there's a whole history here that goes to Washington Heights history. That Rabbi Shimon Schwab, who had been the rabbi of Breuer's here in the Heights, when he was a young man, he struggled with this question of how much of an obligation do I have of Talmud Torah, meaning what right do I have to be involved in other pursuits? What right do I have to go to college? What right do I have to make a living, etc., etc.? So he wrote a letter to a number of Gedolim, and at least two of these letters made their way into Achronische history, became a part of great Svarim. So one of them was Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. It became a part of the Kovet Shirim. You can find the letter that he wrote there. And the other is published in the Sefer Birka Shmuel. And Mesachus Kiddushin, Birka Shmuel, Baruch Ber Leibowitz, has an essay there about Talmud Torah, which was really a response to Rabbi Schwab. And there he discusses that the nature of the Chi of Talmud Torah is when you have time. When you have time, so then you're obligated in Torah study. But if you have other obligations that are incumbent upon you, so then you don't have an out mitzvah right now of Talmud Torah. So if you have to make a living, so then that's what you need to do, and during the time you have to make a living, so you're not chayiv in Talmud Torah. It's similar, as he and others explain, it's similar to the chiyuv of tzedakah. How much tzedakah are you obligated to give? So it's calibrated to how much money you have. Right? We don't say that everybody's obligated to give $1 million of tzedakah a year. But if you don't make $1 million, so then you're honest, you don't have the, it's like you couldn't afford a lulav, so you can't perform the mitzvah, but really you're obligated to give $1 million. No, we define the chiyuv based on how much money you have. You have a certain amount of money that you're able to give. So then that's what creates your chiyuv of tzedakah. So too, when it comes to Talmud Torah, so we have to first look and see how much time do you have. And in that time that you have, that's what's going to create the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So if that's, again, this is something that Stiper discusses in his commentary to Masechet Shabbos, that if that's the case, so then if there's another mitzvah that's in front of you, so you're not chayiv in Talmud Torah during that time. And therefore, if that's the case, so it doesn't make sense to ever say that Torah is going to pater you from other mitzvah obligations, because during that time the mitzvah is incumbent upon you, you don't have a chiyuv Talmud Torah. So the whole nature of the chiyuv is unusual in that it defines itself around other mitzvahs, and therefore for that reason you're not going to be exempted from those mitzvahs. Hi.
So that the way you just formulated seems to be that it goes back to the chiyuv versus chiyuv thing, because now you're just getting chiyuv Talmud Torah versus the chiyuv, because you don't have time.
Well, maybe, except that's not how he formulates it. I mean, it's not how it says. The idea which seems to be here is that we could put it as a chiyuv, but the point is that the chiyuv is defined by how much time you have. So, therefore, when you have a mitzvah that's incumbent upon you, so then you don't have that time. The mitzvah is already taking up that time. So then there's no Talmud Torah there.
So you're saying you're only going to get a key in Talmud Torah if you...
Well, maybe not, if you don't have the right to neglect the other mitzvah. So if the other mitzvah, and we see that it's defined specifically by a mitzvah, she'ef shalasas de'acher, so mitzvah is your personal responsibility, so then maybe you would not get a key in Talmud Torah if you decided to neglect your personal responsibility and learn instead. So that's a question. Now, there is a discussion about a certain type of involvement in Torah which none of us have yet been zocha to. Somebody is Torasum Nasos in a whole different madriga, where he is pater from aspects of davening and things like that. We don't assume that we are on that level.
But that the Rashi and Sifa, which says that if you're Osei can tell the Torah, then you're exempt.
Except from what? You're going to the shiur.
Right.
Traveling to the shiur.
Yeah.
So that part, so once you know.
You didn't say Bombay Torah.
So you're on the way, it's all part of the package, is what it sounds like. If you're traveling to learn, so then that's a defined chiur. But to say that Talmud Torah as a whole, should pater from things that are other than Yubim,
and that becomes a greater challenge to say. It's all a little bit of a balancing act, but that's apparently how it plays out. So there is a lot more to say about this topic. I said there's always going to be extra dimensions, but just to recap a little bit of what we spoke about today. So we spoke about the question, we said a little bit more about the question of mitzvah rabbanan. We talked about the difference between a mitzvah that is a fulfillment of a kiyum deraisa, even if it's rabbinic in its formulation, how that could explain the Gemara and Armasecht about Rav Meirabu Lerega and the issues of Milas Chasadim and the like. We talked about the Nesivus' idea about a voluntary mitzvah, whether that potters, and the Chavetzal Sasharon's observation that could break down into two different models of how you are potter from other mitzvahs. We talked about how this again affects the mitzvah of Staka, how the Losa says play a role, and we spent some time on that question. And then we talked about the general issue of being exempt from mitzvos ben adam l'chavero, or are you not exempt from mitzvos ben adam l'chavero? And we drew the comparison to the Mishnah and Brachos about interrupting Kriya Shema to greet people, and talked a little bit about what the obligations are there, what the sources are, where it comes from, and Rav Shechter's discussion about how it's derived from Avram and Hakbalas Pnei Hashchina and Achnasas Orchim and various applications of that. We got into a few interesting tangents and talked about how this affects the whole question of Kvod HaBrios and why that is able to override certain mitzvos because it is a shibud to other people. And then we talked about Talmud Torah and whether Talmud Torah exempts you from other mitzvos. And the Gemara Moed Katan seems to say that it depends. Is the other mitzvah a mitzvah ben adam l'makom? I'm sorry, is a mitzvah that only you can do, or is a mitzvah that other people will do instead if you don't do it? And we talked about various explanations about is there a chiluk to be drawn between learning itself and traveling to the learning? Is there perhaps an explanation in the idea that Talmud Torah is about performing mitzvos, and therefore if you're not going to perform the mitzvos, it's not going to make sense, your Talmud Torah is going to be undermined? And we talked a little bit how to reconcile that with the idea of Nasa V'Nishma and its explanations that we mentioned last week. We mentioned the Vilna Gaon's idea that Talmud Torah is a fulfillment on a micro level, so we take the smallest unit of time, and that's a kiyum in Talmud Torah, and it means therefore we're always in between and not necessarily in the middle of a mitzvah. And we mentioned this idea also, citing what others have, that Talmud Torah is an obligation that corresponds to how much time you have, and when you have another mitzvah in front of you, so then you simply don't have that time, and therefore there's no chiyuv Talmud Torah that is contemporaneous, and therefore it can't pater from mitzvahs. So a good example of this is that we don't hold on our level that Talmud Torah paters from tefillah, so we will daven mincha now, and again, God willing, tomorrow we'll give you some resources about eating in the sukkah.